Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen live on the radio, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But you can stream anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. You can even listen on demand right there on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday, is, of course, the one Tim Murray. You can hear him on VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, College Basketball Betting Podcast, also coming up shortly. VSiN's College Football Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 9 a.m. VSiN Primetime, weeknights on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
It is a good day. I'm fired up, man. I'm ready to rock and roll. Conference championship weekend. Three championships tonight. So I'm ready, man. Let's get it going.
You and I are not big on the greatest of all time, best of all time. I do think there's an argument, though. This is the best championship weekend we've ever had.
From a point spread standpoint, from a competitive standpoint, I would agree. Because every game up and down the board, there is no crooked number. There is no Michigan-Iowa, Michigan-Purdue. You know, every game is a touchdown or less. There's not even a touchdown out there. The highest number is six. So, look, this is what you get in a year where there's a ton of parity. And this is what you also get when you eliminate divisions. And I know the schedules and how they've kind of been all funky, how big these conferences are, we'll have to figure those out. But, I mean, you look up and down the board, man, based off of point spreads, it's going to be one hell of a weekend.
So we will start first with championship week. We'll talk the implications of what that could mean for the playoff. We'll do all that here in just a moment. Also want to let you know, Blake Topmeyer is going to join the program like he does each and every Friday. He, of course, at the SEC championship game, so we'll get his thoughts on what we've seen this week. Also talk some more championship game with him as well. We'll get into the list. Got to talk about Dan Campbell. I mean, he is who he is. And for better or worse, sometimes you maybe turn it over at your own 30. Other times you make sure the Packers don't get the football. But I thought that was a fantastic Thursday night game. We've actually had back-to-back fun primetime standalone games, which feels kind of like a rarity. So discuss a little bit of that. Also, the over on Tim's weeknight program, VSiN Primetime Live, we just found out about one of the most massive bets of all time, and we got to talk about it because I might have to be Venmoing Tim to have him take some action on the other side because I can't understand why a book would take a $3.1 million money line, but we'll discuss that. We'll get into our cards. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I guess, Tim, because you and I were talking about it on Tuesday, I don't think for us, and you tell me if I'm putting words into your mouth, I don't think that we were all that surprised by what we saw during the rankings, but I do think the inevitable question is Bama in no matter what?
I'll answer the first part first. I was not surprised to see Alabama show up at number 11. What I was slightly surprised about, and I guess I shouldn't be, was how they conveniently tucked Miami just below Bama. I thought they would bump them all the way down. At least Ole Miss would be ahead of them. They were not. So I thought that was just kind of like, really? This is what you're going to do? You're going to just magically put them one spot out of the playoff, knowing there is no possible scenario that Miami could get back in. So I'm sure you've spent plenty of time discussing the rankings and should Alabama be in right now, should Ole Miss be in, etc. But the fact of the matter is Alabama is in right now. And the question that you posed secondly was, are they going to be in no matter what? I feel like I'm on an island.
All right. Let's hear it.
I do not think they are in, no matter what. I am of the belief that if SMU loses a competitive game on Saturday night to Clemson, which I think they will, I think that they stay in. I understand that from a television standpoint, Alabama at Notre Dame would draw record-setting eyeballs to your television sets on either Friday the 20th or Saturday the 21st. But I have a hard time recognizing the precedent that would be set. And essentially, I don't know if this is hyperbolic or not, essentially telling us that conference championship games should go away. If SMU were to get punished, because right now, I understand where this show airs, SEC country, but right now, after the regular season has concluded, the playoff committee has told all of us that SMU is three spots better than Alabama. And now, when Alabama and Ohio State and Tennessee and Indiana and Notre Dame are all sitting there with their feet up, SMU has to go back out there and play a football game that could help them massively and get them a bye, but also in theory could drop them out of the playoffs. So I'm not on board. I actually think in the state of Tennessee, I don't know if you're capable of doing the yes, no markets right now at DraftKings and or FanDuel. I think there's a little value on Alabama to miss the playoff at, plus 325 or something like that. I think the odds are off. So call me crazy, and I'm happy to, put the dunce cap on Tuesday when I come back on. But I think if SMU loses by, let's call it single digits on Saturday night in Charlotte, I think they stay in the field, and I think Alabama gets bumped.
So I think there are two separate issues going on here. Number one, we're talking about what should be versus what will be.
For sure.
And to your point, though, about the precedent, I understand it's a different format, but I think they already set the precedent last year.
So can I jump in real quick?
Absolutely.
The difference, and I understand your argument. However, Alabama beat the number one team in the country last championship weekend, and while it was unprecedented to bump out Florida State with an undefeated record, their starting quarterback was out, and Alabama played a game that weekend in which they beat the number one team in the country. To me, this mirrors more of 2020, which Notre Dame played Clemson, got smashed, but stayed in the field of four, while Texas A&M did not jump in. All of the Texas A&M faithful thought that they should jump Notre Dame because Notre Dame got their butt whipped by Clemson, but ultimately the committee kept them in there. Now, Notre Dame had also beaten Clemson earlier in the year, so look, not anything's going to be an apples-to-apples comparison, but that was my rebuttal to what was your point last year. because Alabama played last championship weekend and beat the then number one team in the country, Georgia.
Yeah, I guess it becomes a matter of your point of view of what was the precedent they set. I would argue it was not necessarily, oh, it's the injury to Florida State, whatnot. I think what they, because everybody was too focused, I think, and I get it, an undefeated conference champion was left out of the playoff despite being in the playoff and not losing. But to me, the precedent that was set was they were telling us the ACC is not like these other leagues. And I think what we saw on Tuesday night is what they're telling us is that the SEC is not like these other leagues, and the ACC is not like these other leagues, and they view the ACC and the Big 12 as the same, in which those are one bid leagues. And to me, it was why the lesson from Tuesday night for me for SMU was you better win the game, because I think what they were clearly establishing, because there was no reason, in my opinion, to separate Alabama from Ole Miss and South Carolina unless you were trying to establish these are not the same, we view Alabama differently, and more importantly, we're trying to avoid the situation that we had last year where we end up hopping them after FSU doesn't lose. And so I think what they were clearly establishing and telling us, and by the way, I don't know, like, it's funny that you mentioned because we're an SEC country. We are an SEC country, and while SEC fans take kind of an unusual amount of pride in the whole league, and maybe sometimes to their program's own detriment, there is an excessive amount of Bama fatigue. I'm telling you locally, everyone is sitting there just going, really? You're doing this? Like, it's one thing, I tweeted it on Tuesday, it's one thing to give Saban's Alabama the benefit of the doubt. This is not Saban's Alabama. And I think
Saban's Alabama doesn't lose by three touchdowns to a 500 football team. Saban's Alabama didn't lose to Vanderbilt, who ultimately finished 6-6. You know, and I'm not, look, let's start here. The SEC is the best conference in the country, period, end of story. I agree, top to bottom, even though Mississippi State's god-awful, Kentucky, not very good, Vanderbilt, good story, glad you're in a bowl, you're not that great, let's be real. But I think there are better teams there, especially the way Florida's playing. But
I also think it's logical, and it has nothing to do with geography. It simply has to do with this. We got the story last week about the amount of money spent per school by collectives and whatnot.
Oh, it's insane.
It's so in the end, these are the most expensive rosters.
Right. And when you, and this point has been made where Oklahoma's not very good this year, but when you go to Norman at night, it's not like going to, you know, no offense to Minnesota, but it's not like going to Minnesota.
Champagne.
You know, or Champagne. Like, you get the weather situation there. I do think
it helps that Alabama's late season loss was to something called Oklahoma.
Right. And to me, what's driving me a little crazy, because I live in the gambling world, and now when it helps out your argument, well, what would we be on a neutral versus this team? It's like, all right, well, let's flip it. What was Alabama when they went on the road to Vanderbilt? 24-point favorites. They lost. What happened when they went to Oklahoma? 14-point favorite. Lost by 3 touchdowns. Like, to me, and I'm not saying that Miami deserves to be in, because I kind of don't. I think we mentioned this on Tuesday, and if we haven't, here it is. You all are to blame.
Yes.
Ole Miss, don't lose to Kentucky. Bama, don't lose to Vandy. Don't lose to Oklahoma. Miami, guess what? All you got to do, you got to go beat Syracuse. That's all you got to do. You're in. So I think.
By the way, you were up 21-0.
Florida State last year, I actually felt bad for. I'm like, that sucks. You guys went undefeated in a power conference. Your quarterback broke his leg, and you got screwed. In the 12-team field, like the 68-team field in hoops, if you don't get in, it's your own damn fault. I'm sorry. So Miami, you had your chance. Ole Miss, you had your chance. Bama, you had your chance, and apparently you're going to get reborn potentially here. SMU, we'll see, because I think it's kind of a tricky spot to go play Clemson in essentially their backyard on a Saturday night. But regardless, in this field, it's been proven. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois. They're in the field. They're getting a home game.
Yeah, they're hosting.
Ohio State lost to Michigan.
By the way, despite the Northern Illinois loss, they are in position to have the best case scenario as if that loss never happened.
Sure.
Notre Dame can't be better than fifth in the system. And they are in position to be fifth.
And the irony of it all, and I'm not trying to, you know, Notre Dame homer here, but I'm just stating the fact. Notre Dame had to beat USC, who, once again, let's play the point spread game. They were only a touchdown and a half favorite, 7.5-point favorite at USC. They had to take care of business, and they did. Miami, all you had to do was take care of business. You didn't, and you're out.
It's why, to me, using your argument, it's like why I tip my cap to Tennessee. In the end, Tennessee was in the same spot that a lot of schools we've seen the last month, because you were on this early, about how playoff pressure would impact how teams play. And let's be real, the month of November should be retitled the month of tight booty holes, because we've seen nothing but tight booty holes. And guess what? They bucked up, and I get it. Vanderbilt's running on fumes, whatnot, but they were down two scores right off the bat before you could blink, and you can easily have that be crippling, especially when you got a young quarterback. And instead, they stepped up and dominated the game from there on, and I tip my cap to them, because we haven't seen a lot of that in this month. Because, like, with using the Ole Miss example, I don't know, this is where I get super frustrated, because I totally agree with you. If you are a three-loss team, you have left it up to the judges. I think if Ole Miss and Alabama play, I think Ole Miss is better. With that being said, it's not just the Kentucky loss, because the reality is
Florida. You beat Florida.
You got a mulligan.
Yes, Notre Dame got a mulligan, and they did not mess up again.
Correct, and that's
why. Was their schedule as hard as Ole Miss's? Probably not. No, it wasn't. It's a fact. It wasn't. However, I know DJ Lagway was back and they were playing better. You were a 2-touchdown favorite at the Swamp and you lost.
I think, though, the frustration that I have, and I think that most people have, is what is annoying, and again, they've left it up to the judges, and that's why we are in the position that we are. But there is nothing, if you watch the sport, there is no legitimate case to move Alabama out of the cluster that they're in.
I agree.
And that's where everyone's losing their mind, because everyone sits there and goes, okay, this is literally then just because you have goo-goo eyes for a script A. That is why people are annoyed.
Both of these teams beat Georgia. Ole Miss beat Georgia better. Both at home, right? That's the common factor. Ole Miss beat Oklahoma. Alabama beat the crap out of LSU.
Yes.
All right. Like, it's splitting hairs.
They both beat South Carolina, but
Ole Miss crushed South Carolina.
Correct.
Like, what do we need to also talk
about this. I do not understand how South Carolina became this, like, sympathetic darling in which everyone's going, they should be in.
Because they didn't have the late ugly loss. I think that's what it is. And I think there is the Alabama fatigue. And South Carolina's like, hey, look at this team. They're kind of cool.
I just don't understand how.
And they got screwed by LSU. But
it'd be different. South
Carolina,
it'd be different. Let me say this.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be different to me if they're in that cluster and they split. Or maybe you lost to Bama, but you didn't play Ole Miss or whatnot. But literally, you lost to both teams. Y'all are all 9-3. You're 5-3 in the league. You all have flawed resumes. I just don't understand how all of a sudden we're screwing South Carolina. Like, I think Sellers has been fun. But at the same time, it's like, I don't understand this. Like, Tim, everyone's acting like, okay, they've rolled. It's like the most under-discussed play of the year, and I do not understand this, and I'm grateful for it because I had South Carolina money line. Tim, I have never seen a play go under the radar like Klubnik's interception, where I get it, Clemson's had field goal problems all year. Like, water is wet. I get that. But at the bare minimum, they were going to have a kick to tie the game, and they were potentially going to score and win the game, and he just throws a mind-numbing pick, and it's like that never even registered with anyone. That was bizarre to me.
It is, and like I've brought up, because we don't know what hurts you. Like, what hurts you more or what helps you more? Is it a good win? How much does a bad loss hurt you? Because the argument, I think...
The answer is, it's whatever they want it to be.
Right. And I think the answer, and why South Carolina folks are saying, but, we don't have a bad loss. It's like, yeah, but you lost to the two teams that are ahead of you.
Correct.
Like, I don't fully grasp that. Like, you guys have been red hot down the stretch. You beat Clemson, as you mentioned, kind of in a weird game, and you know, get a late interception. It's a great win. It's a better non-conference win than Alabama and Ole Miss has, right?
For Wisconsin, sure.
Wisconsin stinks.
Wake stinks.
Ole Miss played nobody. Okay, cool. You lost to both of the teams, and Ole Miss curb stomped you. Like, if you had beaten LSU and the refs hadn't kind of screwed you over, let's be honest, yeah, maybe you end up in this spot. It would be weird.
Well, really,
that
the weird thing is, that's also, in my opinion, an Alabama problem, because in the end, I'm convinced the SEC, if you rewind the clock to that game, that was right after Tua had the Thursday night concussion against the Bills. Former Bama, and I'm telling you, I believe that officials in the SEC were directed that week, you be overboard on quarterback contact.
Oh, you're talking about Sellers getting hurt?
Correct. Well, no, yeah. So the pick six where they just blocked.
Oh, right. Okay, I'm sorry.
They just blocked Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah.
They just blocked him. Like, it wasn't a dirty play.
It was ridiculous.
It was a block. And that is why, because there was an emphasis. If you think back to that week, there were so many roughing the passer calls and like quarterback contact calls. And I am fairly convinced and decently well-sourced that was a directive.
All right. So I think the other two kind of interesting angles for this weekend, I think the obvious one is SMU-Alabama. If SMU loses, what happens? The other two are what happens with the loser of the Big Ten and the loser of the SEC. Because in my circles, the Notre Dame crazy fandom circles, they're like, well, if Penn State loses, Notre Dame should jump to 5. I'm like, once again, I'm back to like, is it Penn State's fault? Like, they were sitting pretty. Like, they're like, great, Ohio State, go ahead and win. We're good. You know, we'll be the 5 or 6 seed. Cool. We don't have to play on championship weekend. And then tough guy Ryan Day, you know, loses again to Michigan. And now Penn State's like, really? Okay. I mean, there's a world where Penn State's the number one seed, which is just crazy. But I don't think, and this is a Notre Dame fan speaking, I don't think Penn State should drop behind Notre Dame because they lost to Oregon on a neutral.
So
they told us, right? The committee told us through 12 games, Penn State's better than Notre Dame. I disagree with that premise, but regardless, that's what they told us. And now they could get dinged for losing a neutral site game to the only undefeated college football team.
Well, this is what's confusing to me. So if we take the bracket as it currently is,
mm-hmm.
and let's say we have chalk, which almost assuredly we will not.
We will not, yes.
We have, as Tim has mentioned, we have every game under a touchdown. Every favorite's not going to go undefeated. I am of the opinion that the bracket would not look like it did on Tuesday, but I don't know how you would change it up. Because here's the other flip side of this. If Oregon goes completely undefeated, and in a year where, as we've discussed, in a year that was defined by no elite team, people losing bad games, and all over the board, a team goes 13-0 in one of the two biggest conferences, and their reward is going to be you're sitting there waiting on the winner of Ohio State, Tennessee. How are you rewarding the number one seed? Like, I hate to sound
doesn't
like...
Doesn't make sense.
It's, you know, it's one of my favorite tell your stories when Cal was crying about when they were the 8 seed and they were playing Wichita State, who was undefeated as the 1.
Yeah.
You're not hurting us. You're hurting Wichita State. By underseeding us, you're taking it out on Wichita State, which, maybe, John, that might have been the point, just so you know. But how are you going to sit there and realistically say... This is a reward for Oregon, which has been the best team. Because if you did have chalk in this scenario, how can you talk me into that's a greater reward than the 5-12 game? And then the 5-12 winner then getting to go and playing Boise in a neutral.
Or Clemson on a neutral.
Right.
It doesn't, and it is one of the oddities of the bracket, and I've said from the jump that I didn't want auto bids, and it had nothing to do with the team that I cheer for not getting a bye. I was actually cool. I'm like, I immediately was like, dude, this is beneficial. I'm like, they get a home game and they get the four seed. Cool. I'm good with that if they're the, you know, number one team in the country in theory. So yeah, I mean, and that leads into Oregon's motivation on Saturday.
Yes.
Now I think they'll be motivated. It's a championship. And I forget who made this point, and it's a pretty
if it's basic, a good one, I'll take credit.
It's a pretty basic point.
All right, so I won't take credit.
Players get hurt against bad teams.
Absolutely.
So not playing in 2 weeks is beneficial.
By the way, like, when we say bad teams, we're talking about relative to this
right,
field. Guys
right.
get hurt in the FCS game.
Sure. Like, look, Jordan Travis broke his leg or ankle, whatever it was, for Florida State against North Alabama, right?
Yes.
Like, players get hurt in practice. You know, the starting center for Ohio State.
I watched Chad Kelly tear his ACL against Georgia Southern because Ole Miss couldn't put him away.
So getting the bye is obviously an advantage. But to your point, the way the bracket has fallen this year, playing Ohio State or Tennessee on a neutral field is not really advantageous. But being the the five seed and getting, in theory, UNLV, because that's who would be the 12 seed if they were to win as a 4.5-point underdog, tonight. Man.
Are you dipping your toe again?
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm actually not. No. Okay. I didn't bet that game when I went to it. I had one bet, and I won that bet. It was under Ashton Gentry rushing yards. But yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to me to look at the two big boys, Big Ten and SEC, and look at those games and be like, huh, do you really want to win it? I mean, you do. Easy answer. Longer answer is like, is there an advantage? Because look, if you're the sixth seed, you could play Indiana, could play SMU, and then you could play Boise State or Iowa State or Arizona State. So, yeah, it's going
to
be...
I think the answer is you want to win it and not for pride, not for whatever, all the dumb reasons we give. In the end, what it comes down to is that's four additional quarters you don't have to play.
Yeah, exactly. And I think inevitably, and this is a bigger picture question that I don't have the answer to because money makes the world go round and television networks run these conferences. Let's be real. We know that. These conference championships, look, I think the Big 12 championship is very fascinating, and it makes it so much more intriguing this year because it's a true play-in. Same with the Mountain West championship tonight, right?
Yeah.
To bring it local, if Memphis had a better season like we were expecting,
they could have lost one. It was just they had to split Navy and UTSA instead. They lost both.
Right, and they could be potentially playing in a play-in game. Like, those conference championship games are of massive appeal. The ACC, Clemson, who has had a mediocre season, they've got a chance to get in. Now, there are people out there saying, oh, this waters down the field. I disagree, whatever. But you look at the Big Ten and the SEC, and you're like, well, they're both in, and you get a bye, but to your point, it's like, all right, if we get a bye, we're going to be facing Tennessee or Ohio State or maybe a rematch against Georgia? Like, what? So there's so much intrigue as this all kind of cascades down. I don't know if we ever get rid of conference championship games and just make it clean 16. There's just too much money in them.
Yes, 100%.
There's so much money in these conference championship games. There's massive eyeballs, television ratings. Like, what did ESPN pay for the SEC rights? Billions. So,
yeah, I mean,
they want it.
I want to say it's like $500 million a year.
I mean, look at the schedule tomorrow, by the way. Do you notice anything? There's
one standalone game at
four. There's one game in the middle of the afternoon. There's games at noon Eastern, 11 Central. There's games at 7 Central, 8 Eastern. One game in the middle of the afternoon. And that's the SEC championship.
Yeah, it's $3 billion for 10 years.
So I don't think they're not going away. Should they? You can make an argument.
Well, but it's then, also not if they going go away. You know, it's also, it's a lot. The championship game has kind of become these leagues' Super Bowls, not in the sense of the value of the game, but it's like where business deals get conducted.
Well, and also, too, like Iowa State, Arizona State, they didn't play each other this year.
Yeah.
So we would have had a whole other, like, who deserves to get the auto bid of the Big 12 at 16, you know.
Where so, we had to consult footnotes to see who was going to be in the game.
Right. So long answer or short answer, they're not going anywhere. Long answer, you can make an argument maybe they should go elsewhere. But look, at the end of the day.
Well, this is a sport we don't do what we should.
Well, yeah, we had up until this century, we had co-champions because
one in a conference that dubbed itself one true champion.
Well, yeah, that was a whole other kerfuffle. But I was talking about in 97. Oh yeah, we had
sports writers that were drunk that just sitting around a table. Well, I think Penn State
and Michigan was in the Big Ten and the Pac-10 at the time. We're like, nah, we're not going to go to a SEC a championship game. We got to play in the Rose Bowl.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk about all these topics with Blake Topmeyer. We will do that next. Before we do that, I want to remind you that, of course, this time of the year is one of the number one engagement seasons that we have. And if you're thinking about getting engaged, you should go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings for a couple of reasons. Number one, you get more choices. Robert Irwin Jewelers has an enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They can even custom make your engagement ring risk-free and easy. You can do so with peace of mind with a meant-to-be guarantee. That means that for any reason, if you're unhappy with your custom-made engagement ring, you have a full 365 days to return it. You can do something as simple as bring in a picture, have a concept, a drawing, even just something that you have in your head. You can make it come to life with your friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Don't forget about free ring sizing for life. Also, the free jewelry spa service. And also, you can ask her now and pay later with financing options like 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 stores locally or shop online at rijewelers.com. Also, during the holiday season, open on Sundays. When we come back, Blake Topmeyer joins the program next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, episodes available each and every week wherever you get your podcast, on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, is there anything in your life that you love as much as that playoff committee loves Alabama?
maybe my wife.
There's a 0% chance my wife loves me as much as they do.
Yeah, it's as I wrote this week, like, if there's any possible way to get Alabama into the playoff, we've seen one committee after the next find a way to get them in, whether that be last year taking Alabama over undefeated Florida State, whether that be the 2017 season when Alabama did not win its own division but made the playoff and ultimately went on to win the national championship, and now this. And look, I do think there are some resume-based reasons to put Alabama into the playoff. It wouldn't have been my choice, but I do think you can point to some certain metric reasons to back it up. And yet, how be that as it may, I think it is fair to wonder if the name on the front of the jersey was different, would it be Alabama in the playoff or would it be someone else?
I think it's literally as simple as this, and I guess it's a hypothetical, but it's like, if you flipped Alabama's resume with Ole Miss's resume, I still think Alabama's in.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, the only way Alabama has the advantage over Ole Miss is, like, the strength of schedule metrics. And I'm not just saying if you use ESPN, like, regardless of which, you know, strength of schedule compiler you use, whether it be Massey, Sagarin, ESPN, whatever, Alabama's strength of schedule collectively comes out stronger than Ole Miss. However, if you're applying the resume tests based on, like, what are your best wins, both Ole Miss and Alabama beat Georgia, beat South Carolina. However, the fashion in which Ole Miss beat those teams was highly more dominant. The South Carolina win was on the road. They smashed them. And then you add into the fact of who you lost to and how you lost. I thought, to me, that could have been, it wasn't, but could have been the most punishing aspect toward Alabama, was the fact that they lost to 2 6-6 teams, Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, and the Oklahoma loss, which occurred, you know, just 2 weeks ago, was in blowout fashion. You know, Oklahoma won by 21 points. That to me, I would have tipped the scales for Ole Miss when you combine the fact that they dominated Georgia, they dominated South Carolina, and although Ole Miss had a flawed resume as well, and had a loss that looks really ugly at home to Kentucky, their losses were more competitive. They didn't have anything on the level of getting trounced by 21 points to Oklahoma.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time opening the show with that, and a lot of it overshadows what you're going to see on Saturday, which is a top five matchup and a rematch of what we've already seen once this year, which is Georgia taking on Texas. And Georgia's defense was incredible down there in Austin. Carson Beck threw the ball away a bunch. So I don't know, when I'm looking at this game, Blake, from a total standpoint of, you know, 50 points or a point spread standpoint, I'm tying myself into knots trying to look at both sides. So I'm curious, when you look at this game, we've seen it once, how different is it going to be tomorrow afternoon in Atlanta?
I think a lot of how different it is depends on how Texas's offensive line has played. Like, we've seen that unit for most of the season look like one of the more dominating offensive lines, not only in the SEC, but the country. I mean, when we think back even to the Michigan game, a Michigan team that's proven that, yeah, it's flawed, but its defense is still pretty good. I mean, Texas just absolutely had its way with Michigan's defense, and that started with the offensive line. And so much this season, we saw it last week against Texas A&M, when Texas, you know, which is down to its third-string running back, collectively they rushed for 240 yards, and they've been really good at protecting the quarterback. Well, that didn't happen on that night against Georgia. I mean, whether it was Quinn Ewers or Arch Manning in there, Texas quarterbacks were under duress. Quinn Ewers did not play very well. He had three turnovers in that game. They yanked him out of there briefly. They put Arch in for a while. They put Quinn back in. And so you add up the way that Texas' offensive line got picked apart, and you combine in the four turnovers from Texas, and that really didn't give the Texas defense a chance that night. Like, the 30 points Georgia scored was very deceiving, because Georgia only had one scoring drive that traveled more than 34 yards. I mean, 23 of their points came on drives that went 34 yards or fewer because of the repeated turnovers. So, you know, in terms of, does this look different on Saturday? I don't know, but to me, it really, the equation all starts with Texas's offensive line has to play like it's played in the other 11 games this season, and not the way it played, you know, when they faced Georgia. And credit to Georgia. I mean, they brought some good blitz packages that night. But sometimes it was just as simple as, you know, one side lining up on the other, against the other side, and Texas' line got whipped on that particular night.
I can't quit Georgia.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on them. Like, I am cooling on them in the playoff a little bit, just because they're so inconsistent. Like, on any given day, I think it's possible they look as good as anybody in the country, but I'm just wondering, can they do it, you know, three or four games in a row? I think this game might be more important to Georgia, for me, than Texas. Like, you know, if Georgia loses, first of all, does that risk them having to go on the road in round one? I don't think so. I think the committee will keep them at home. But even if they're at home, you know, having to win four straight games and the consistency of having to do that, I don't know how much I trust Georgia to be able to do that in the playoff, just from a consistency standpoint. But, like, on any given day, yeah, I think they could look great. I mean, I don't know. It comes back to a question, I guess, of who do you trust? And there's not really anybody in the country at this point that I trust a whole ton. But the consistency factor for Georgia is, I guess, starting to concern me.
I guess this is where, because I do agree with you, but I started thinking about it in these terms. How many teams in the country would be 10-2 if they had Georgia's schedule?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they have played a significantly more challenging schedule than Texas has, and some others in the SEC as well. But it's the games against, like, Kentucky and Georgia Tech that start to have
UMass.
Concern. Yeah. It's those types of performances that it's like, I don't know, because the schedule's been really hard, but you still don't expect them to have to win, you know, at the end and putting away Kentucky by 1 point. And, you know, really, they had very little business winning that game against Georgia Tech. And, I don't know. It's the games against teams like that, middle-of-the-road type of competition, that leave you thinking, are they going to be able to do this week in and week out in the playoff? When we've seen far more consistent teams, Texas, again, has not played Georgia's schedule, but Texas has really only had one game where it's been pretty ugly. Well, I guess you throw the Vanderbilt game in there, too. Two games for Texas, I think. That was at the peak of Vanderbilt's performance. But you could throw in probably that game as well. You know, Oregon got pushed to the brink by Wisconsin and Boise. But mostly, I think
Idaho.
Idaho. Yeah, but these are early season type games we're talking about, Oregon, whereas Georgia, like, we are seeing this late in the schedule now. They looked bad against Ole Miss. They didn't look great against UMass. They didn't look good against Georgia Tech until the end of that game. I don't know. I agree with you that they played a tough schedule. In terms of talent assembly, I normally fall on the side of talent assembly, and you know, the teams with the most talent win, but I don't know that they do have the best collection of talent. I think they have a top five collection of talent. But for whatever reason, it's just been so Jekyll and Hyde with this team, more so than even past Kirby teams. Like, I think we can point to a couple years past and say, like, oh, they had a couple close calls. But this is more than just a close call or two. This is like four or five or six times in 12 games where they've either lost or, you know, it's been white knuckle en route to a victory.
Blake, I think the other question regarding the SEC and the Big Ten is what happens to the loser. It's pretty easy with Oregon and Texas. If they lose, they slot in at 5, assuming the other doesn't lose. And if both of them lose, it's probably Oregon 5, Texas 6. But Penn State, they're currently 3rd. Georgia, currently 5th. What happens to those two teams if they were to lose on Saturday, because Notre Dame, Ohio State, Tennessee, all teams behind them are not playing? So what's your expectation of the loser and how far they could potentially fall and change things up in the bracket?
I do think it depends a little bit on what it looks like. Like, I don't think the committee really wants to punish the Big Ten and SEC championship loser very much, if at all, in terms of seeding. I don't think they want to, but if they get blown out, it might get to the case where it's kind of unavoidable. Now, the thing that really helps Georgia is that they do have that head-to-head win against Tennessee. Now, it was in Athens, but that was a pretty dominating performance. That was one of Georgia's really best, most complete performances of the season. It was close in the first half. And then, you know, Georgia was clearly the more dominant team after halftime. And so that, I do feel like that provides a little bit of protection for Georgia. Like, would you really slip them behind Tennessee when we saw those teams play head-to-head and Georgia won convincingly? I don't know. Like, that's what makes me think. I don't know that Georgia can fall any further than 8, because it just doesn't make a lot of logical sense to punish them to the extent that you're slipping them behind Tennessee, a team they beat. Now, to me, Penn State's a little bit different because Penn State has a head-to-head loss to Ohio State in Penn State's home building, and we've seen Ohio State go up against Oregon, very competitive game in Eugene. Ohio State loses by a single point. If Oregon dominates Penn State and you combine that with the fact that Penn State lost to Ohio State, another team in this bracket, I think Penn State maybe has a little bit more room to slide, depending on what it looks like Saturday if they lose, than Texas does, because I think that win against Tennessee, or excuse me, than Georgia does, because I think that win against Tennessee provides some seed protection for Georgia that Penn State doesn't necessarily have because they lost to Ohio State.
All right, I think we all agree on the Big Ten and the SEC protection of the game. Where do you come down on what they're going to do about SMU if indeed SMU were to lose?
Boy, that is the burning question. I feel like it's being overlooked a little bit.
Not on this program.
Not on your program. Okay, good. You guys you're shining the light where it needs to
be. Oh, yeah, because, I mean, you and I talk decently, but the disagreement here is I think Tim's coming at it more from a what should happen perspective, and maybe some will say I'm cynical, but I would argue I'm skeptical. I've always believed this playoff, whatever, it is the Big Ten and the SEC's party, and they invite everyone else. I think last year that the ACC's not like this, and so if I'm SMU, I'd go ahead and win that game.
If I'm SMU, I'm thinking I got to win this game to get in. Maybe they can get in if they don't, but if they lose to Clemson, which just lost to South Carolina, and you look at SMU's metrics, you know, they can't point to their strength of schedule. They can't point to any, like, awesome victories on their resume. I'm with you in that, in general, I think it's the SEC and Big Ten's party. But I think what makes it even worse for SMU is, even though they got the 11 wins and some of them have been in dominating fashion, particularly recently, there's nothing they can really point to on their schedule and say, hey, look, committee, we beat Team X, which you think very highly of. So even though we lost to Clemson, we're in the playoff. There's nobody like that on SMU's resume. Now, you can say the same thing about Penn State, sure, but as we said, the Big Ten and the SEC, fair or unfair, are treated differently. And I think SMU's really going to be hurt by the fact that it doesn't have the loftiest strength of schedule and it doesn't have the marquee win. And actually, if you got 11-2 SMU and 10-2 BYU, and SMU lost to BYU, I mean, they're not putting BYU in at this point, but my point would be, do they start to look at SMU a little more similarly to the way they've been looking at BYU all along, which is not all that highly?
You know, if Boise State wins tonight, they're pretty much locked into a bye. Another discussion that I think hasn't been brought up all that much is, Blake, Arizona State, Iowa State are 15-16, Clemson 17. In theory, well, not in theory, factually, Clemson would have a better win this weekend, right? So there would be a lot on the line, who gets the bye, who doesn't. So let's put our tinfoil hats on here. Clemson beats SMU by 3. Iowa State beats Arizona State by 3. Who gets the bye? Who gets the 12 seed?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Now we're cooking with gas. Yeah, baby,
yeah,
come
now
on.
We're cooking. If Arizona, and I know this isn't the question you posed, but I'm going to kind of come at it from the reverse here. If Arizona State wins that game, I think they hold off Clemson. Even though it's a better win for Clemson over SMU than Arizona State, Arizona State has the lead enough in the seeding right now, or in the rankings, I think they would hold them off. If it's Iowa State, boy, yeah, there's not much separating in the rankings Iowa State and Clemson right now, is there? Again, I think it may depend on how it looks. Like, if the score differential is...
Well, if Iowa State wins, I can tell you this. It's not going to look great. It'll be workmanlike. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be very clear. I tip my cap to them. They play the way that they do to have to win. But it ain't going to be pretty.
That's true. And if Clemson...
looks kind of dominating against SMU, I think you might be onto something, that they could flip Clemson, catapult them ahead of Iowa State and give them that final bye, and Iowa State sitting on the 12th line. That is a good line of thought. I don't think they would do that to Arizona State. I think Arizona State has enough of a cushion that they would hold off Clemson. But Iowa State, yeah, I think all bets are off there.
Yeah, I also think, because I was mentioning this to Tim, if everything were to go chalk, which it obviously won't, I still don't think the bracket's going to look like it did on Tuesday. I think they know they've got some issues that they're going to have to sort out.
So where my question to that would be, where do you think it's going to be?
So let's say if Oregon is...
Chris Felica keeps trying to bring up Ohio State getting the 5 seed.
Well, I guess this is my question. If Oregon goes undefeated in a year that was defined by no one being undefeated and... like, they win the Big Ten. Their reward for the 1 seed is to play Tennessee or Ohio State? Like, I told Tim, like, I feel like I'm Calipari, but this is Calipari when Wichita State was undefeated and they got a 1 seed and he got an 8. Like, you're not hurting me. You're hurting Wichita State. Like, are they really going to do that? And then you have this whole 5-12 and 4 problem. Like, I just really find it hard to believe that if it goes chalk, which it won't, that the bracket's going to look exactly like it did.
No, I think you might be right. And I think what they do with Penn State has the potential to shuffle some things around. Because I do think, even though they don't want to overly penalize the Big Ten or SEC loser, like I said, the case with Penn State is different because they played Ohio State. They would have 2 losses. They would have played, you know, a direct comparison, Oregon, you know, whereas Ohio State went on the road, Penn State on a neutral site. I think there is the possibility to slot Penn State in behind Ohio State, bump Ohio State up. I'm not saying Penn State would have to go on the road. I'm saying Ohio State would slide up a rung. Penn State slots in behind them, which would change some of these matchups we're talking about. Might change, have the potential to change all of them. What I don't know is, like, are you willing to put Georgia, if they lose, are you willing to slot Georgia in behind Ohio State and Penn State and say, we're going to have a first-round rematch, 8-9, Georgia-Tennessee? I mean, I think the committee has come to grips with the possibility that they're not going to totally be able to avoid rematches in this bracket, whether it be in round one or in the quarterfinals. Like, you just have to face it. There's a chance that a rematch is going to happen somewhere. So it is possible, you know, if Penn State gets beat, you know, that would be a chalky result, right? I mean,
yeah.
Oregon's a favored seed. But let's say it's a little bit bigger than the spread. Let's say Penn State loses by, I don't know, 11 points. Could you see Notre Dame slide up to the 5, Ohio State slide up to 6, Penn State go in at 7, Georgia, if they lose to Texas, be 8? Yeah, I think you
and then Tennessee 9?
And Tennessee 9, and the downside to that is,
or maybe at that point, maybe what you do is move Indiana. Like, can you move Indiana? Like, that's the other thing. It's like, all right, move Indiana to 9, and Tennessee to Tennessee to 10.
I mean, they can do whatever they want, right? Like, we would all know what they were up to is just preventing a rematch and getting kind of clever with the bracket, and then, you know, Ward Manuel would come up with some hocus pocus answer that denies that that's what they're doing.
Do we think? But, I'm gonna throw to this. Do we think Ward has a PR person that's like on staff that's like, okay, here's what we're doing. You need to come up with the talking points. Like, I think there's someone that's like coming up with this because none of it feels authentic and it all feels extremely PR-y.
Well, he should have someone that.
Yeah,
comes
I mean,
up
with yes.
Yeah. What's interesting about Ward's response is, I know people complain about not getting much out of him. You never get any. You get much.
Well, he is in college athletics.
Right. However, I actually think he's been more illuminating than Boo Corrigan, his predecessor, was.